VOA News. I'm Tommy McNeil. U.S. President Donald Trump called off the next G7 meeting because of the coronavirus. AP correspondent Mike Rossi.
Citing the ongoing coronavirus pandemic, President Donald Trump has called off the G7 meeting that was scheduled at Camp David, Maryland in June. The meeting would have brought together the leaders of the U.S., Britain, Canada, France, Germany, Italy, and Japan. White House spokesman Judd Deere says the leaders will meet by video conference instead. The G7 leaders had a video conference Monday in a meeting convened by French President Emmanuel Macron. Trump, who takes on the leadership of the group this year, plans to hold virtual meetings monthly during the global response to the virus outbreak. I'm Mike Gracia.
The Trump administration is warning Americans not to travel overseas because of global coronavirus pandemic.
The upgraded alert urges Americans not to travel abroad under any circumstances and return home immediately if they are already abroad, unless they are planning to stay for an indefinite period. The previous alert advised reconsidering all international travel, which is called a level 3 alert. This alert is level 4 and is unprecedented, usually reserved for specific countries involved in conflict, natural disasters, or where Americans face specific threats. These alerts are not mandatory. The only way to ban Americans from going abroad would be to invalidate their passports. Ed Donahue, Washington.
And the coronavirus is starting to have a significant impact on the U.S. job market. The Labor Department says the number of new claims of unemployment benefits actually soared to 70,000 last week. Both the one-week rise and the total number of applications were far above the past year when the jobless rate fell to 3.5%. This is VOA News. U.S. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell introduced emergency legislation to stem the economic fallout from the coronavirus pandemic on Thursday. As AP Sagar Magani reports, the nearly $1 trillion package would help offset some of the losses brought by the pandemic.
The Senate is under enormous pressure to finish a relief package pitched by the White House that could exceed $1 trillion. Half would go straight to families and individuals. Direct deposited checks that Treasury Chief Steven Mnuchin tells Fox Business Network would amount to $3,000 for a family of four. The rest of the package would prop up businesses and keep employees on the payroll. Some economists say the country's probably already in a recession. Sagar Magani, Washington.
China reported no locally transmitted cases of the coronavirus for the second day in a row, including in Hubei province, the original epicenter of the pandemic. China's National Health Commission said there were 39 new cases in all of mainland China, all of which were imported. Meanwhile, Italy surpassed China in the number of people who have died from the virus, with Italian authorities saying 3,405 Italians died. As Reuters' Maha Albdraoui reports, Italy's healthcare system is stretched to the breaking point.
Footage shot inside Olio Po Hospital in Cremona, Italy on Thursday shows the strain at the front line of the battle. A hospital normally containing 50 beds now housing 120. And that's still not enough. The sound of ventilators feeding oxygen into lungs are heard as patients lie immobile on their beds. Some are able to sit up and signal to nursing staff behind masks. Others lie on their fronts connected to machines, unable to breathe any other way. With cases still rising, the government is considering further restrictions on the limited amount of outdoor movement currently permitted.
Suspected Islamist militants killed 29 Malayan soldiers on Thursday in an attack on a base in the country's northeast. The army said earlier in the day that the two soldiers had died, but tweeted later that the death toll had heavily evolved to 29 killed, 5 wounded. There was no immediate claim of responsibility for the attack in the town, which is about 125 kilometers north of the city of Gao. India hanged 4 men on Friday who were convicted for the rape and murder of a young woman on a bus in New Delhi in 2012, in a case that shocked the world and shamed the country over its appalling record for crimes against women. The men were executed at dawn on the outskirts of the capital. I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
Break Africa from the Voices of America. I'm James Bucky in Washington. Today is Friday, March 20th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Uganda business people are feeling the pinch due to the coronavirus pandemic.
The prices increased. So when they increased, the buyers, they reduced the quantities they were taking. So nowadays they are taking, someone who has taken like 10 boxes, taking like 5 because they're not buying. People are fearing to buy.
Kenyan journalists want their government to provide live news feeds for coronavirus updates to avoid crowding at news conferences. Gambia suspends flights from 13 countries to prevent the spread of the coronavirus. And Malawi's president names a new cabinet ahead of the May 19 presidential election.
This is a cabinet that is based on political appeasement. This is a cabinet that has been put together to galvanize the electoral votes for the DPP and the UDF alliance.
That's Malawian political analyst Vincent Kondwe, and a Ugandan presidential aspirant is charged with treason. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley Sports are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Say the coronavirus pandemic is having formidable effects on their lives. They say there are less buyers and they are running out of imported products from China, which is the origin of the coronavirus. But Uganda's finance minister, Matia Kasaija, says Ugandans should use the opportunity to start local manufacturing.
It is business as usual. At Chiseka Market, one of the busiest places in Kampala. Normally, the place is packed with thousands of people, buyers and sellers of various commodities, mainly motor spare parts and electronics. Sylvester Kamya Mwonge, one of the traders here, says his clients have reduced by more than 60% for the last 2 weeks because of the COVID-19 disease.
Even here, you are seeing, we used to have like a line here of people who used to come and buy. Now, you've spent almost 10 minutes here, no one is coming. And they're expecting a day of the month, have to pay rent. We are eating, we are having staff. They come by taxi, by what? So we are highly affected.
The 37-year-old father of three employs 4 people at his business and must pay rent over 1 million Uganda shillings, or about $270 every month. Akram Nantegra, another businessman who deals in electronics, agrees. He says that some of his customers are not coming simply because his business has run out of stock for some of the products.
We are not able to make stocks because where we get them from, they no longer go to China. For instance, last week, we wanted some mixers. And we are not able to get them because they are out of stock and no one has them.
Hussein Kwikiliza deals in importation of foods, mainly fruits. He says his business is struggling because whatever product that is available on market is obtained at a higher price. For example, a carton of garlic, which used to sell at 110,000 Uganda shillings or $29, is now selling at 180,000 Uganda shillings or $48.
The prices increased. So when they increased, the buyers, they reduced the quantities they were taking. So nowadays they are taking, someone who has taken like 10 boxes, taking like 5, because they're not buying. People are fearing to buy.
While addressing the parliament this Thursday, Matia Kasaija, Uganda's finance minister, says he's well aware of the problem. He said imports are expected to decline by 44%, but he says there is a silver lining in the unfortunate coronavirus pandemic.
This provides an opportunity for the country to produce some of the imports locally in line with our import substitution and export promotion strategy.
Kasaija says COVID-19 disease will lead to a decline in economic growth and an increase in the levels of poverty. He says the government will borrow some $100 million to fund budget deficits brought about by the consequences of the coronavirus on the economy. For VOA News, I am Mugume Davis Rwakarinj in Kampala, Uganda.
The Media Council of Kenya has asked the Kenyan government to provide live news feeds for coronavirus updates to avoid crowding at news conferences. In this exclusive interview with the Voice of America, the Media Council Deputy Chief Executive Officer and Program Manager Victor Bwari said the move is to safeguard the journalists and also help the government in fighting the deadly virus. Marie Ojiambo reports from Nairobi.
In the new guidelines by the Media Council of Kenya on the Media Sector Emergency Response Team, the council has written an advisory to the Office of the Government Spokesperson to suspend all live press conferences as a way of avoiding large gatherings. Speaking in Nairobi, the Deputy Chief Executive Officer, Media Council of Kenya, Victor Bwire, said that the move will be the best way for journalists to comply with the Ministry of Health guidelines on COVID-19, among them avoiding crowded places.
Our advisory was informed by, one, we need to protect, to make sure that we show what is the public perception outside there when we are telling the public to keep a social distance. But during such state briefings, we see merely 50 people. Public are likely to see that perception and not follow the direction. Two, the safety of the people. We don't know where these journalists are coming from. At the same time, we don't know some of these people who are accompanying the cabinet secretary. Some of them are medics who have just come from health centers. What is the possibility that they can infect?
In the advisory, the council has also asked the media houses to prioritize on the safety of their employees. Mr. Bwire says the live feeds will help other media houses far from the city also to access the information, and that journalists should embrace other multimedia ways to get the content.
The ministry can use especially the presidential delivery unit infrastructure to do a live feed and send to others. These can be recorded messages. These can be recorded press conferences, which can then the clips and multimedia audios can be sent to other media houses. In any case, the issue of saying we minimize people who go for press conferences to 10 does not deny any journalists from doing interviews. There are a lot of other means of doing interviews, not necessarily from going to press briefs.
The council, however, says in the case journalists are needed to cover breaking news, then the government should provide the necessary protective gears to protect them from the deadly virus. A journalist based in Nairobi, Duncan Maiche, says the challenges for such move may lead to other media houses missing out on crucial information from the conferences, and that the government should consider one live feed for all.
If at all the government will buy this idea, then they ought to ensure that they provide the alternative solutions. This is providing a single feed to all the media houses, as much as, and they have banned all the live press conferences, they ensure that all the journalists get to get the right information from the right channels. And this is through the government single feed, so that all the media houses get the right information so that they don't end up misleading the public.
Tomorrow, Saturday, Kenya shall be holding a national prayer, and the government has already advised the media houses to reduce the number of journalists attending the function. Reporting for VOA's Daybreak Africa, I am Moreno Jembo in Nairobi, Kenya.
The Gambian government has suspended flights from 13 countries to prevent the spread of the coronavirus. As Pandera Umbai reports from Raleigh, North Carolina, the government reached the decision on Thursday during a cabinet meeting.
The United Kingdom has stopped the list of the 13 countries affected by the coronavirus temporal travel suspension. The government says direct flights from corona-affected countries would be suspended until further notice. The decision followed what the government called recommendations it received from experts handling the coronavirus pandemic. Ami Bojan Sisoho is the director of press at the president's office in Banjul.
And today happens to be a cabinet meeting, and the Minister of Health also used that opportunity to brief the president and cabinet as a whole on the recommendations of the health expert committee concerning the recent developments they have been gathering in terms of the situation. So based on that, they have decided that 13 countries have been affected, and directly flights are coming from there to the Gambia. They have to be suspended for now until further notice.
47 other countries were exempted from the temporal ban. China, Italy, and the United States were among those countries. Many couldn't comprehend the rationale behind the government's decision, but Press Director Bojang had this to say.
Because you don't have direct flights coming from those countries, as far as we know, Cabinet went further to approve that they should go along with the recommendations of the Health Expert Committee to quarantine them mandatorily for 14 days. And that will include people coming from China and all the other countries you're talking about.
The government's decision followed the escaping of 31 Gambia Experience passengers who had fled from the Golden Beach Hotel where they were quarantined on Wednesday. The passengers weren't happy with the sanitary conditions at the hotel and they decided to break the hotel gate. The State House Press Director has called on Gambians to maintain personal hygiene to avoid being infected with the coronavirus.
That we continue to abide by the WHO recommendations in terms of preventive means, washing hands regularly as much as possible with soap and water, and to do the social distancing as much as possible.
Pas Samba Jau is a Gambian political activist. Jau described the government move as commendable.
Definitely, we've been calling for the closure of the borders and all borders, including flights coming into the country. And the reason for that is that this is a disease or a virus that is mostly imported into Africa, because most of the cases that we hear in Africa are from other countries.
Meanwhile, one Gambian lady has been tested positive for the coronavirus, COVID-19. Gambia's Army Chief and the Inspector General of Police were on board the same flight with the lady who was tested positive for corona. For VOA Daybreak Africa, this is Pandering by reporting from Raleigh, North Carolina.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voices of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, March 20th. Malawian President Arthur Peter Mutharika late Thursday named a new cabinet. The announcement comes days after the formation of an alliance in the run-up to the May 19 presidential election rerun. The alliance is between the ruling Democratic Progressive Party, the DPP, and the opposition United Democratic Front, the UDF, led by Atupele Muluzi, the son of former President Bakili Muluzi. Political analyst Vincent Kondwe says the new cabinet appears to be bloated and a move by the president to try to garner support ahead of the poll.
So, Vincent, what do you make of this new cabinet assembled by the president, Professor Arthur Peter Mutharika?
Well, I had previously said, and I indicated that we should expect, one, a very bloated cabinet, two, a highly political cabinet, and now, three, this is a cabinet that is based on political appeasement. And fourthly, this is a cabinet that has been put together to galvanize the electoral votes for the DPP and the UDF alliance. And then we're seeing again some other members of parliament who have been appointed into the cabinet from an independent member of parliament who previously had belonged to the People's Party. So squarely put, this is a cabinet based on political appeasement.
What do you think are the prospects of this new cabinet? And do you think it will galvanize the DPP ahead of the much-anticipated presidential election rerun, particularly when today you had the alliance of the MCP and the UTM formally being launched in Malawi ahead of the election?
Well, it seems to me that the DPP and the head of state is on a firefighting mode. Because when you look at this 32-member cabinet, he has also brought into the cabinet individuals who are not members of parliament. Since 2014, when Peter Mutharika came to power, if I am very, very correct, he has never appointed individuals who are not members of parliament into his cabinet. So this is a first. As to whether these people have the political capital, it is very, very doubtful, because some of the people who he has appointed into his cabinet had lost as members of parliament in the constituencies where they were competing. So whether they have political capital, it is yet to be seen. But now, the issue for me that the DPP has to contend with Yes, it is the UTM, the MCP-UTM alliance. But for me, the biggest challenge has been failure to deliver on their promises.
But then who is going to administer the election, since it appears that Parliament has passed a vote of no confidence in the ability of the commissioners of the Electoral Commission, including the chairperson, Madam Justice Jane Ansah, to administer the elections. Preparations, however, appear not to have been announced to the general public. So who is going to organize this election? Will there be a new chairperson or a new team to run the presidential election rerun?
Well, according to our legal framework, Parliament can only recommend the firing of the Electoral Commission commissioners to the president. And then it is the president who is supposed to actually fire the Electoral Commission commissioners. Now, by refusing to fire the members of the commission, the president is acting legally. It's within his legal powers.
Malawi political analyst Vincent Kondwe was speaking with viewers Peter Clotty from the capital, Lilongwe. The lawyer for former Ugandan security minister, Lieutenant General Henry Tumukunde, says there has been a consistent pattern in Uganda for all candidates desiring to challenge longtime President Yoweri Museveni to be charged with treason and other charges. General Tumukunde, who announced recently his intention to challenge President Museveni in the 2021 election, was this week charged with treason and possession of firearms. Lawyer Alex Lagunda says General Tumukunde has denied the charges against him.
The general was remanded to Luzia Maximum Prison. That is the largest detention center in the country, upon pleading not guilty to the charges of treason that were preferred against him by the state.
Do you know exactly why he's been charged with treason?
Yes, according to the documents that were presented in court, in particular the charge sheet, it is in respect to utterances that he made while appearing on one of the local TV stations, in which he said that if he was Rwanda, he would support people seeking for change in Uganda. And the charge is in respect to those particular statements, because the state says in its understanding and wisdom, those statements meant that he wants another country to come and topple the government in Uganda. Though the general is very clear in respect to what he said, and his intentions were not what the state is purporting them to be.
The general announced just recently he wants to run for president in 2021. I know that the Honorable Bobby Wine has announced also he wants to run for president, and similar thing has been happening to him. Same with Dr. Besigye. Does the general see similarity, or does he think that the charges against him are related to his announcement to run for president, meaning politically motivated?
Inevitably, there has been a very consistent pattern within Uganda for all candidates that come up and declare presidential ambitions to be slapped with charges ranging from treason and other similar related political offenses. So it also must be noted that General Tumukunde, on the 3rd of March, notified the Electoral Commission that he will be starting consultations in respect for his presidential bid. A few days after, he notified the police seeking for guidelines that will guide his electoral bid and consultation process. So being arrested barely less than 10 days after he had declared his presidential ambitions leaves a lot to be desired. I wouldn't, from a legal perspective, want to conclude the same, but the pattern and the consistent pattern that is seen within the present prosecution leaves a lot to be desired.
When is his next court day for the general, and what can you tell us about his health?
The case was adjourned up to the 30th of March this same month, and that's when the general is expected back in court for mention of his case. However, as the legal team, we are preparing to fix the hearing of his bail application, presumably before the 30th of March. We're trying all our best if we can get a date within next week when he will be in position to appear in court, because his health is not yet fine, and he was detained when he was just picked from a hospital bed, brought to court, and read the charges. Then he was remanded to Luzila prison.
For Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Friday morning to you, Samson.
Good Friday morning to you, James. We begin the sports with news on how the coronavirus is impacting sports activities on the continent. In Nigeria, the Nigerian Football Federation has suspended its football league for 4 weeks after the number of confirmed cases in the country increased from 3 to 12. According to a statement by the NFF, the shutdown affects all on-field activities, the various national teams, the Nigerian Professional Football League, youth football programs, and even street football. The Nigerian government has also called off the National Sports Festival scheduled for the 22nd of March, a move that saw top athletes such as the Commonwealth Women's 100 meters record holder, Blessing Okabare, cancelling her last-minute trips to Nigeria to participate at the games. The news of the suspension of sports activities in Nigeria has been received with mixed reactions by sports fans and officials.
When we have such a large gathering of people, just one person can cause so much damage. And because of the way our health system is, and because and for the fact that a lot of these guys are coming from towns that have little or no well-established health system, it will be a disaster if that festival becomes a breeding ground for this virus.
If what we hear that foreign athletes who ply their trade wherever will be allowed to come and represent some states, I think that puts an X factor in there. I think it's just good to let's rush things.
Elsewhere in South Africa, the Premier Soccer League have resolved to try and finish the 2019-2020 season by June 30th, but say they remain flexible beyond that to bring the campaign to a conclusion. The South Africa Premier Soccer League is on hold due to the coronavirus outbreak, and the PSL has hoped to play on from as early as next week after gaining the backing of the Minister of Sports, Arts and Culture, Nathi Mathiyiwa, to do so. Staying with the coronavirus pandemic, the Confederation of African Football earlier this week called off the 2020 AFCON African Nations Championship over concerns around the coronavirus pandemic. Uganda was one of the 16 countries that were set to take part in the tournament that is exclusive for African players based in their own leagues. The tournament had been set to run between the 4th and the 25th in April in Cameroon, but following its postponement, the Federation of Uganda Football Association has called off a training camp. Edgar Watson is the chief executive officer of the Uganda Football Federation.
The national team that has been in camp preparing for CHAN is going to be stopped, and the players will be released to go back to their clubs.
And that's it on Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good weekend. We look forward to your report again on Monday morning. That is it for this Friday, March 20th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Samson O'Malley, along with all of our engineers, I'm James Barton in Washington, wishing you a very good weekend.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bubu music to hip life, bonga flavor to soukous, Afrobeat to ndumbulu and makosa to kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the international news.
Hello, I'm Douglas Impoga, host of VOA's Reporters Roundtable. Join us every Thursday as we discuss important African topics and events. I'll have a panel of African journalists and expert guests to discuss the topic at hand. We take a deeper look at important after-news topics. That's Reporters Roundtable every Thursday at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.